Breakups and divorce can be extremely painful, lonely, and confusing. But I believe your breakup can be your biggest breakthrough. I'm Lindsay Ellison, author, coach, speaker, and single mom of two awesome young men. Welcome to a podcast about finding joy and inner peace after a breakup. You may not be able to see what's on the other side yet, but I promise if you do the healing work, your life will transform in ways you never thought possible. Welcome to Unbreakable You. Do you think you're a good listener? Well, I used to think I was until I did a workshop on active listening, and I didn't realize how hard it was not to interject my thoughts or opinions. And if I did, I realized that while the other person was talking, I was not really listening and more thinking about what my response would be. Being a good listener is critical to building healthy relationships, and today, my expert guest, Christine Miles, is here to weigh in on how to be a good listener. She is the founder and CEO of Equipped, a training and consulting company that helps leadership teams grow sales, develop people, and create cultures of understanding. She developed The Listening Path, a transformational workshop on listening to understand, and she's the author of What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? Today's show will hopefully encourage you to examine how you are listening and what problems may arise by not listening effectively. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope you get to learn how to listen differently. Well, hello there, Christine. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here, Lindsay.
Okay, so the biggest complaint and cause for relationship failing is listening. I would love to hear a little bit more about what that is, because you would think that the biggest complaint and cause for relationship failing is not listening. It would be something other than that. So I would love to hear a little bit about why that is. But before we get there, because that's the first topic I want to kind of start with, just tell us a little bit about how did you get here and how did you become a listening expert?
Well, it started pretty young, and I believe a lot of our passions really start young. And mine started for a pretty functional reason, because I grew up with a mother who had mental health issues that she came by very honestly. She had lost her mother from childbirth. So what I saw was a woman who was charismatic and lit up the room and very loving. Underneath the surface was a lot of darkness, a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And my job was to really understand her pain that was going on below the surface. So I learned to listen to things that other people didn't listen to and didn't see. Certainly burden in that, no doubt about it. But also the gift was really that I learned to listen differently at a pretty young age. And that's been a thread in my success throughout my life and throughout my career. And now I try to help others. Because what I saw is the reason people were failing in a lot of endeavors was because of the inability to listen. And that's the reason I was succeeding. So now we do a lot of work to help people succeed in a different way by listening differently.
So what are some of the things that we do wrong when we're listening?
Well, there's so many things, but I want to take people off the hook, because here's why we do it wrong. One, we're not taught. We're told to listen, not taught. First problem, 0 years of education on listening in our education systems from grade school through executive leadership programs. So how can you succeed at something you've never been taught how to do is the first problem.
Right.
The second is the brain is a great enemy of listening, telling us to do everything but listen. So when we're trying to listen without the skill, without the tools, our brain is in charge. The subconscious brain is ruling us. And so some of the things that interfere are like rehearsing, problem solving, advising, mind reading, all kinds of inhibitors to this. So we can't really overcome them too easily because we don't have the tools or the skills to do so.
So I think of when you said grade school, every teacher says, listen up, listen, everyone, sit still and listen. And so a lot of the kids, I think of myself in grade school, I mean, that's all we're doing is forced to listen. So what are we doing? What's kind of the bad thing we're learning versus what should we be doing differently?
Well, and listening really has a lot to do with how we get smarter, because when we're able to listen in the classroom, right? Then we're able to assimilate more information. And this is why the kids who have attention issues stand out in classrooms often, because they have a hard time, more so than most of us, listening. So telling somebody to listen, if it were only that simple, I mean, we can hear, but and that's a sense, but assimilating information and listening is a totally different thing. And we only retain 17 to 25% of what we hear, by the way. So we are failing just by virtue of showing up and just being told to listen. So the spirit of the message is right, but it's like telling me to run a 5-minute mile. Just go run it. Well, okay, but you better get me in shape and tell me how to get there. Even as an athlete, that wasn't my strength. So how do you do it?
Give me some examples of what a bad listener is, especially in relationships.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems in relationships is that we think we already know and why, and that we are supposed to know because by virtue we've been in the relationship. So it becomes an expectation of, don't you know me already? And where I think I know you already. So we make a lot of assumptions rather than really staying very curious and really seeking to understand. And that's what really good listening is. It's not just hearing, not just, you know, having a person feel heard, but having them really be understood. And that takes a different kind of skill level. But I think that's why so many of the relationship problems fundamentally, the foundation of the house is what we're listening for and listening to. And when that's like death by a thousand cuts. So, you know, it's wound after wound after wound over years or months or whatever the time is where the person isn't really understood. And that's how the fractures happen. And that's how relationships often crumble.
So you said the word curious, and funny that you said that, because I actually just did a podcast a couple of weeks ago called Always Be Curious. Those were that's my ABCs of boundaries, always be curious. Mm. And asking questions rather than making this assumption that you know the answer. Mm-hmm. Do you feel as though that when people, even, you know, relationships, whether it's romantic or work relationships or friendships, just relationships in general, I guess, do you feel as though, especially when there's kind of conflict resolution, there's a problem, someone's got an issue, is trying to communicate how they feel, do you feel as though people are already geared up for a defensive response?
Yeah, and I think that's natural and that's human. And it's what happens when we get, quote, comfortable. But one of the problems with conflict management, and I learned this a long time ago, early in my career, was that we tend to look at areas we disagree first, when really the area we need to focus on first is the areas we agree. My first career, I was a therapist. I started at 22, first job out of college. I went to people's houses and was their family therapist. Longer story. But one time I remember early in my career, I had a couple come in and say, you know, they had nothing in common. They were married for 20 years. They had two kids. They talked about their shore house, their this house or that. And they're like, we don't have anything in common. I'm just kind of perplexed. I went, what? What do you mean you have nothing in common? You just give me a full list of things you have in common. Could we agree that you have a lot in common first before we talk about the areas that you don't agree on? What's in it for you to make this relationship work or not work? Let's start there rather than we don't see eye to eye on this, this, and this. So it's a big miss because we just take for granted so much.
Mm. So is there a way to tell if someone is not listening or is listening?
I think it's pretty easy. It's if you don't feel the person's listening, they're probably not.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean they're not trying, by the way. Mm-hmm. That's intention and impact are two very different things. I mean, one of the things I know from this work is that when people feel intentional about listening, they believe they're doing it well. And again, we're not taught how to listen. So how do they know what the listening looks like? So they show up with the intention to listen and therefore they think it's going to happen. But that doesn't mean there's not a disconnect for the person who's being listened to. There's our first fight, right? You're not listening. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. Yes, you know, back and forth we go.
So if you're not feeling heard or you don't feel as though someone is listening to you, what is the best way to ask? You know, the first thing we'll say, kind of what you're not listening to me. You know, it's funny because I've been told that in my former relationship, you're not listening. And in fact, I actually was. So I would feel very defensive. Mm-hmm. And that's actually kind of a trigger phrase. Like when you tell me you're not listening to me, because I feel as though, like you said, I feel like I am a good listener. So in terms of, let's tackle that on both sides. So if you don't feel as though you're being heard or that the person you're speaking to is not listening, what is a way to get their attention rather than saying you're not listening to me?
Well, this is going to be tough because we can only control what we can control, right? We can't control other people. So we can try to convince the other person to listen to us, or we can start to listen differently. Now, if you're in a paradigm in the relationship where you're always doing the listening and you're not getting that back, then that's a different problem, right? So then we have to start listening to ourselves. Listening isn't just about listening to others. It's about listening to ourselves as well. But one of the ways to do it is really to say, you know, lean into it yourself and start to listen differently. So in other words, if I don't feel like you were listening to me, Lindsay, I might say, you know, I feel stuck, right? I think I hear you saying you're trying to listen. So tell me more. What am I missing? What do you feel you're doing that I need? And I would reverse it and try to get you to start talking more so that I can understand what has you stuck to help me get unstuck.
So interesting. So you're saying that if you're doing the talking and you don't feel as though I'm listening, you're going to instead of you talking more, you're going to get me to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So you become the listener.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. And then the other way, in terms of if I'm the talker, you're the listener, and I accuse you of saying you're not listening to me, what would you say?
I would say, tell me more. I would ask for more, not less. I would say, tell me more so that you give me more of the insight and the answers into why don't you feel that I'm listening to you, rather than yes, I am, and trying to convince. Here's what the human nature tells us. People don't like to be told what to do, and telling doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So if it worked for me to tell you you're not listening, and then therefore you'd snap into it and listen, that would be great. But that's not how we're wired as humans. We need to change the paradigm and the symmetry in the relationship so that it shifts and that we dynamically change it. It's a negotiation. Relationships are a negotiation. So I had a call last week with someone who said that their grandmother used to say this, and I just thought it was magic. She said, when you listen, you know what you know, and you know what they know. And so when you know what they know, that helps you get more of what you want. So if I know why you're not listening to me or what's in the way, that helps me actually get more of what I want out of the conversation with you. But it's counterintuitive because we have to sometimes give before we get.
Mm-hmm. So I openly say this to everyone that I'm very ADD. Listening has become harder and harder for me as I've gotten older. And I know this. It's almost like a borderline handicap for me. So for instance, when I am coaching, and if I'm, you know, got an hour session with someone, I take notes.
Mm-hmm.
In order for me to be an active listener, because then I'll start to forget. Or what I really try not to do, a lot of people, they'll interrupt because they're so afraid that they're going to forget that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that's why I'll take notes, because I'll let the person speak and write something down that I want to go back to that, you know, it might go off course or et cetera. So I take notes. And even when I was in the corporate workplace, I actually have to take a lot of notes in order for me to sit there and listen and really sit still. It's very, very hard for me to do. And so that's my tool. What tools would you give to someone to say, you know, how to just listen and to, whether it's sit still, or here's the other question is, when someone's a constant talker,
mm-hmm.
hijacking the conversation.
Yeah.
That's the worst for me, because and in fact, I'll just say, you know, in, I'm like, look, you got to give me some sound bites here to work with, because
right. If
you keep talking, I'm going to start to glaze over, and it has nothing to do with you, but that's just how I listen.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's go to the hand. Let's writing notes. That's again, 17 to 25% of what is said is retained. So if that's a retention tool more than it is a listening tool. All right. And that's a wonderful thing to do, especially in your field. That's a necessary. People in sales meetings should do that. sometimes it's hard to do both. That's the complaint I hear is, how do I take notes?
Right.
That's the real conundrum of it all. And there are tools. And what I talk about in my book is really what the tools, we call it the listening path, or the listening path, the path to understanding. There's six tools. And one of the things you also said earlier is that, you know, being curious and asking questions, really important. But questions can also interfere with listening, because my curiosity can interfere with your story.
Yeah.
So we contaminate the conversation a lot with what goes off in our own brains. And so that's part of what gets in the way as well. So one of the questions that I mentioned was the tell me more question. That's a very strong but benign question, because I'm not directionally telling you where to take me. I'm saying, you tell me where to go, and then I'm going to guide you in the conversation with that open-ended question. So curiosity can interfere.
Okay. So what are some of the six tools? Is tell me more one of them?
Tell me more is one of the six most powerful questions, which is one of the tools. We call it the compass on the listening path, because you need to, there's lots of trails you can go in a conversation. You just mentioned that, right? Like, people go all over the place. Well, how do you stay on the main path to really understand what the true story is and where you're going? So the questions can orient you to the path and also be kind of a sedative, especially to what you're describing, which is my brain is igniting all over the place, right? You have so many thoughts going in, which way do I go? So those questions become the compass or the guide to help you stay on the main story. And so tell me more is one of them. How does that make you feel is another powerful question that you can ask. When we uncover the feelings, we also uncover a lot more of the story. And so that's one tool. There's other tools as well, like the map itself and how, what's the path to getting the story and understanding those things. Again, I'm getting a little bit more granular here.
No, that's good. I like to hear some granular. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's important that you can't be a guide in the conversation unless you know where you are. And so I often say, we meet people in the middle of the movie, right? We don't know their backstory. We don't know where they've been in life. We get that impression and we have to figure it out. The same thing is true in conversations. People start with a problem and then we start wanting to kind of figure it out, solve it. But we don't really know where they are in their own story. Are they in the middle? Are they at the beginning? Are they at the end? We're not oriented. And when we're in the middle of a movie, we're confused unless we have the beginning. So we need to understand what are the elements, what are the stops to really understand where we are on the path so that we have those trail markers and we know where we're going, so that we can be the guide to help people find the insight and find that understanding. I mean, think about it. Your kids come home, they tell you a problem. Is that always the problem, or is there something more behind it?
Yeah, I'm glad you just mentioned that, because I wanted to talk about that. I mean, a lot of my listeners and my clients are, you know, they all have kids. They all, you know, a lot of them have teenagers. So that, I think, is something that people struggle with a lot, is being a listener to your kids. Mm-hmm. The problem is people struggle with those conversation starters so that you can be listening to someone,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you have a teenager, a lot of them give you these one word answers, right? Mm-hmm. How are school? Fine. What's going on with such and such? Nothing, right? So are there any good conversation starters or openers, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that it launches you to then be a listener?
Right. So it's a common problem, right? Because kids are figuring themselves out and trying to make their own way, and they don't have all the verbal skills sometimes. So it's very easy to go, how was your day? What happened? These are kind of close-ended what things.
Right.
Here's the message. It doesn't matter if it starts there. There's always more. So we had a gentleman in a workshop. One of the things we asked people to do is get a story from a loved one. And he gathered a story from his nephew the night after the first workshop, using the tools that we practice and teach. And he said to his nephew, how was your day? And he said, I didn't get the basketball shoes I wanted. Right. Now, what's the next natural question might be, well, why not? And what basketball shoes did you want? And what, you know, instead he said, oh, really? Well, take me back. And he said, well, my dad promised me the basketball shoes. okay, tell me more. And as he asked those more kind of open-ended questions and used the compass, what he found out was he was really upset because his dad was making promises and not keeping them as of late. Mm-hmm. He had a girlfriend, his parents were going through a divorce, and he felt slighted and not as important to his dad. Mm. It wasn't about the basketball shoes. It was about a promise that was made. And so we go in the wrong direction. We go forward and we try to figure out that singular problem rather than going backwards and opening up the conversation. But we have to look for the moments and realize we're just looking for the pause in the conversation and letting them tell us whatever they want to tell us rather than what we want to know.
So in terms of, let's just use that example. It's obvious that this child wants to be heard. How do you conclude that conversation? Because I think one of the biggest faults people make when they are listening is they feel right away that that is either an invitation or an obligation to solve that person's problems.
Yep.
Because you're like, oh, this person has a problem and I need to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say a lot of people are really talking because they just want to feel heard, but they don't want their problems always solved. And I think that's a definite Mars Venus thing too, right? I mean, you hear that complaint all the time, and with men are for Mars, women are for Venus, where, you know, we tell our husband, oh my God, I just had the worst day and da, da, da. And you just want to vent. I feel like women want to vent and men want to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you bridge that gap?
Well, here's what I've learned through lots of years of this work is that men might be a little more guilty of it, but women are pretty guilty of it too.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. Yeah.
And here's why, because wanting to solve the problem is a helpful thing. It's not necessarily a selfish thing. It's like, I see you in pain. I want to make it better. So that's the first misunderstanding we have, intention over impact, right? So, and I think part of what scares people is they do want to vent. If you tell me you want to vent, that scares me a little, because I don't know if I want to be the recipient of the venting,
right?
So there's the second thing. And I agree with you that people want to be heard, but I want to define that a little bit. And what I think people really want is to be understood when they're heard, not just listened to. That's a venting thing. I'll let you talk. And then, like you said, that can just be overload. Give me the sound bites, right? I had a guy say to me one time, my ex-wife used to take 9 hours to tell me about her 9-hour day. Like, I couldn't handle it, right? It was too much. So, but if I can get to understanding you in a shorter period, then it's, we both win. So how do we get to that understanding is really what's more important. And that's a whole different kind of dynamic in conversation. So the problem then, this scenario that I just gave you, is that the obvious problem seemed like, well, he didn't get the basketball shoes he was wanting. The real problem is he misses his dad. We're solving the wrong problems all day long, which is why we get to death by a thousand cuts. That's either in business or in our personal lives. So we have to make sure that we're hearing and understanding the real problem rather than just solving what's put out in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
Usually more to it.
Now, I have a tool that I often give, I use myself, and I give this to my clients as well, is that when someone is sharing said issue, and then I'm the listener, I will then, I mean, I used to say kind of like, well, you should do this. And I'd say that those are the kind of the two things that I've learned. I really, really try not to almost remove from my vocabulary is the words you should.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of reasons. One is, how do we know what they should or should not do? Right.
Right.
And then two, they may not want to hear that.
Right.
You know, they may not. So I always ask, are you looking for feedback on this?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like my feedback on this? And then them saying yes or no, because I mean, sometimes I'll be like, you know what? But thank you. Or I'm sure, you know, I'm curious or whatever. But by them saying yes, that actually turns them into this listening mode, and they're no longer the active speaker. They're more the active listener. Do you have any other, you know, do you agree with that? And do you have any other thing where, okay, how do I transition from helping them problem solve if that's what they want?
So I do agree with that. I think it's always good to set up the soon to be listener before you give advice, right? There's a permission slip that's always helpful, right? I still find it only works maybe 50% of the time, even with the permission, unless I do this. And I had a gentleman I was coaching about a few months ago, and we were 20 minutes into a fall. And I said, can I tell you what I think? And I told him, and he goes, I don't know why I don't mind it when you tell me things I really don't want to hear. And I said, look, not for nothing, I'm going to tell you the secret, because I wanted him to do this in his own world as well. I said, you didn't just tell me the problem and then me say, well, let me tell you what I think. I made sure you felt completely understood before I dared to say anything. And how I did that was, not only did I listen and gather, I then reflected everything he said in a meaningful way, facts and feelings, and asked, did I get him? Do I understand you? And when he gave me, and we went through a couple iterations of that before he said yes. And once I had the yes, that I understood him, then I said, can I tell you what I think?
So how did you explain to him that you understood him? Do you say things like, okay, so what I'm hearing is, give me some phrases that allows you to
sure.
share with your speaker that you get them before you start to say, can I give you advice?
You just did it, which was fantastic, which
okay.
is, I get you. We call that one. So the analogy for the conversation is, you wouldn't go hiking in the woods for 3 weeks backpacking without any tools or supplies, right? You wouldn't make it to the other side. We're going into conversations unprepared. So one of the tools is the compass. I want to make sure I don't get lost. The other is the map, so I know where I'm going. Another tool is what we call the flashlight, or how do I reflect or shine a light on the important things that he told me so that I can shine that light back to you and let you know what I've heard. And then and this is a real missing link in conversations, which is, how do I make sure that I in fact heard you and understand and get you? So we call that the water filter, because our own brains will contaminate the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my story is going to go in there and the filter's going to come out. I want to make sure I didn't contaminate it. So I say something like this. I say, let me see if I get you. And then I reflect in 10 to 90 seconds, depending on how long I listened, shining just the light on the important stuff. And then I affirm, do I get you? And you're either going to tell me yes, right? Or yes and. And most often it's yes and. Yeah, you got me, but.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, once I've given you the opportunity to really let me know it all and I get you, now when I go to give you that advice, where I say, may I now tell you, there's a different level of trust, because I feel deeply understood in a different way.
Okay.
And that earns you the right to tell.
Yeah, I definitely like that. I have learned a lot about, in my world, it's called talking boundary. We talk about just kind of almost the same, it's the same path, but you're just using different words. And I really like that. And when I am speaking, from what I've learned, is that especially if I'm mad at you, Christine, right? We're in a relationship and I'm really mad at you.
Yeah.
We really try to avoid the words you did this, you did that, because right away it gets that listener into this defensive mode and they're not listening to you anymore. They're starting to make up their defense.
That's right.
I didn't do that. So what I have been taught to do is, hey, Christine, when you did such and such, what I made up about that was kind of put it back that I'm not being heard, or I'm not, it's really trying to eliminate the words you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, you know, do you use that method, or how do you share with someone that you're angry with them without starting to go onto the you mode?
Well, so you're saying so many important things, right? So here's why the you mode doesn't work, right? Because competition's a great thing. I learned this in grad school. Like, I was a competitive athlete. I was competitive. Competition works really well, except in one area: relationships.
Yeah.
When we compete in relationships, we fail, because nobody wants to lose versus win. Win-lose is somebody feels bad, right? Now, you can't, sometimes you have to not compromise and you just have to make the decision, right? Your parent, you know how that is. But it's how you make them feel when they don't get their way, not the other way around. So all these things are important. You need to talk from the I perspective. This is kind of assertiveness 101. How do I assert to you what I feel? Now, I'm gonna say this works for non-relational, even toxic relationships as well as healthy relationships. It's both. But it's a paradigm shift that, rather than convincing you to understand me, I'm going to understand you first. That's the shift. So rather than saying, I'm upset, I'm this, the first place you go is to understand the other person. And then you talk about what you need or what you feel. So
interesting.
That's the shift.
Okay.
That can feel really hard if you're in a toxic relationship, because you might feel drained and like you've done enough. And do I have to give more? But again, it's what's the goal here? Because telling doesn't work, and especially in toxic relationships, that works even less so. So how do you change the conversation to be more to be more satisfying?
So how do you avoid, if you're shifting the paradigm and you're having this conversation with someone, because I can see people naturally going, oh, that makes sense. Okay. Thanks, Christine. All right, Christine, I'm mad at you, right? Why did you do that? I'm curious, Christine, right? That's the quote, being curious. So how do you, but I'm still accusing you of something. So what is a way of being curious? You're angry, right? If you're angry, how do you be curious, or how do you shift it and make it about them without it accusing them?
So let's role play it. So Lindsay, it sounds like you're mad. You hear that I'm mad at you. How does that make you feel?
Oh, so you ask me how it makes me feel. Got it. So I would say, good. It would almost kind of throw me off a little bit.
Right. So, well, I don't like it when you're mad at me, you might say. It upsets me. I feel criticized. I feel like I can't please you, or I feel like I don't know how to make you this. Okay, tell me more. So you end up having the conversation about why I'm mad at you, but you do it through the other person what's getting in the way.
Yeah.
The why questions are really difficult to answer.
The why?
The whys. Because we assume people know why.
But what do you mean by that? Why are you mad at me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an analytical question. It's a heady question. It's not a heart question. And head questions lead to arguments. Heart questions lead to changes and shifts.
Interesting.
So it's tempting, and we're all human, and we're all going to go there. But this is how to make sure that you are actually having the conversation you want to have, not the fight you don't want to have.
So instead of saying, why are you mad at me? You say what?
So I might say, I think you can hear, I'm upset with you. I'm mad at you. How does that make you feel?
But then what I would say is, wait, so I'm getting confused. No, I'm mad at you. Okay, got it. So it's really about asking how I feel. Got it. Okay.
I'm mad at you. I told you that. How does that make you feel, Lindsay?
Okay, got it. I like that. That's it. I'm going to use that one.
One of the things you said, I want to make sure I don't miss this,
because
this is important, because this is part of a fight. And again, I want to make sure that, because I know part of what you do so well is helping people in toxic relationships, right? So this isn't going to feel good in the toxic relationship, because it won't feel mutual. But that's not necessarily, you already know that on some level if you're in a toxic relationship. That just may help you listen to why you not need to not be in that relationship, or how to navigate it more effectively. It's not going to feel any more mutual. You may not get more, you might not get as much of what you want, except less fighting.
Yeah. I'd say that, I mean, I don't teach people how to communicate in a toxic relationship. You know, it's really more about co-parenting. So, you know, having to communicate with someone who's toxic.
Well, that is a relationship. Well, I mean, yes.
In a way, yes. But for so many, it's not a relationship. It's just something that's just it's a power struggle is what I really call it. But there's a lot of, I think that especially if you've been in a toxic relationship and you're getting out of one, and then when you're dating, everyone wants to just do things differently, right? Because when you're in a toxic relationship, you do learn a lot of bad habits.
Yeah.
And when you were trying to start over and get into a better, especially in those kind of early dating phases and, you're courting and you are, you know, the honeymoon period is starting to fizzle. And now you're starting to have some conflicts, right? Mm-hmm. Or just miscommunications, not even conflict.
Yeah.
That's where I think is this work becomes really handy, because you really do have to change your habits and patterns of communicating if you're really trying to cultivate healthier relationships.
Yeah, and also manage difficult ones, because the reality is you're in a bit of a hostage situation when you're co-parenting with someone who is toxic, right? Your children are your hostages, and you want to make sure they're safe, they're okay. There's a book by Chris Voss called Never Split the Difference, and he says if you want to get something done, become an expert in empathy. Right. And so because the old paradigm of hostage negotiation was just tell the person that took the hostages, I'm in charge, I'm going to get them out.
Yeah.
And that didn't work. Right. We need to identify the feelings of the person that is holding the hostages. And so if we shift to an empathy mode, which is very hard to do when you've been hurt and when you've, you know, even sometimes emotionally abused or otherwise. But it's, again, what's the end goal? How do I safely keep my children really in the best place? And so ideally, this is more for healthy relationships, but the reality is it's both, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And the other thing you said was about what do I do if somebody's just talking, and I got to interrupt you, right? And so I need a soundbite. We interrupt all the time. We're all guilty of it. Here's the only reason you should ever interrupt, and that is to understand. Rather than to tell.
Yeah.
If you interrupt to understand, you'll still have the same effect. But rather than, hey, here's an interruption. It's more like, let me stop you. I want to make sure I get you and reflect a little, shine that flashlight, slow the person down. And then when you interrupt to understand and get them rather than to tell them something, they're much more inclined to come with you.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, how do you, you had talked about a little bit about identifying your listening persona and realizing it when it is unhelpful. How does one identify our own listening personas?
Well, there's really two main personas, and one is a curious detective and one is a defense attorney, right? And we kind of describe these two. So I want to paint the picture for your listeners. So our brains, like I said, are the enemy, but they're also our friends. We learn to really, that's the definition of emotional intelligence, right? Putting language around what's happening. So we have our conscious and subconscious brain. And, you know, that's kind of split in two. So the curious detective is one that is letting our subconscious kind of do the work in a very helpful way. The defense attorney is shaping the story. So when, you know, you have a witness on the witness stand, you're asking questions to get them to tell us the narrative that you want them to tell to make your case. We get into this persona all the time for a lot of good reasons, but also for a lot of bad reasons in our conversation and in our relationships. So what we want to do is let our curious detective take over and let the story unfold. Be the guide. Let me guide you how to tell me your story in a meaningful way, but don't shape it. And that's the difference between the whys and all the pointed questions and the, oh, you hear I'm mad at you. How does that make you feel? That up.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a podcast, oh gosh, I don't know, a few months ago with Terry Cole, who did this book called Boundary Boss. And I'd say one of the, I think, biggest struggles, and I kind of mentioned it a little bit before, but it is this whole notion for me, when I started to really make peace of, I don't have to solve this person's problem.
It's relieving, isn't it?
Liberating. It was a massive shift for me when someone is talking, because I remember, you know, as a teenager, because that's all we did was talk on the phone, because that's all we had.
Right. Right. I've been there.
But I remember feeling almost, I call it false empowerment. And we learn this somewhere in our family system and, you know, in the various roles we play in our family system, where we are taught that we have this level of empowerment that we actually don't have, where we can actually change someone's mood, that we can change someone's thinking, we can change someone's behavior. And that's typically taught by a caregiver that has put that responsibility in on us. So that's called false empowerment. That false empowerment then bleeds over into relationships. And thinking that we actually are empowered to change someone's mood or behavior or anything. And so once I started to make that connection, I recognized, I'm like, oh my God, I actually don't have any power to change anyone's viewpoint. I could give them my opinion.
Yeah.
But it was amazingly just, I'd say over the, even the past couple of years, just in the relationships that I have, when people come over, and especially now that doing what I'm doing as a coach, I always felt this need. I'm like, all right, I guess I have to solve their problems because that's what they're looking for. And in fact, they're not.
Yeah. Well, people tell you, I want your help to solve the problem. So that's the first one, right? And look, that was one of the burdens in my upbringing. While listening was a gift, obviously there's an omnipotence that is created. Like, you are the power to fix and make, you know, make, you're the problem solver at a very young age. So understand things that are beyond your scope. And then we take that into to other things. So boy, do I understand that very, very well. But one of the things that one of my therapists over the years told me, and I think was just such a powerful message, was the gift is just to bear witness to somebody's pain. Mm. There's a lot of pain that you can't solve. And, you know, that's the first thing. So sometimes it's just being present in the pain, not just venting, but really, again, reflecting and understanding. Even if the words are, I can't imagine what that feels like, that's a different level of comprehension and empathy, right? But it's also that people ask us to solve problems for them all the time. They just don't mean it. They think that's what they want until you start telling them. I, again, learned this early in my work as a therapist. Unfortunately, I was trained very well in systems therapy, so I really learned early how to reframe things. But I also learned this in the sales world. Like, a lot of the times the person that is rushing you to solve the problem is the one who's asking for the help. So we fall prey and victim to that a lot. It's a sales trap. It's a personal trap. It's a lot of things, whether we're set up for it from our childhood, like maybe you and I were, or not. We tend to want to go forward and we want to be helpful, and we want to be helpful by making things better. And sometimes we can help, but the precursor to that is to truly understand what the real problem is, not what we think we heard the problem to be.
And I really want to advise my listeners, because I, you know, one of the things I hear all the time is, I'm an empath, right? Yeah. And I always say that's just a fancy word for being codependent, because being an empath can be, I guess, a wonderful trait, but I think it really sets you up for failure, because what being an empath to me means you're absorbing everything that person says. If they're in a bad mood, then suddenly, because you're an empath, suddenly your mood just is now bad. I think of empath as coral, right? A coral absorbs every toxic thing in the ocean and is always absorbing and absorbing. So when someone is giving, they're speaking to you, whether they're venting or even, you know, having been a manager in the corporate world, one of the things as a manager I struggled a lot with was hearing an employee complain. And I just felt so stressed out. I think I'm actually a really bad manager, because I always wanted to solve their problems. And then I would feel like a failure as a manager if I wasn't solving their problems. And that was years ago.
Sure.
But I do think that there's that kind of listening with boundaries, or having empathy with boundaries. I don't know. How would you describe that issue when someone is telling you things, but then you absorb everything and you don't know how to, you know, say it differently?
So I used to call this the responsibility ball. Like, you have to make sure you don't leave with it. So that's metaphorically when I'm empathizing and I'm saying, do I get you? I'm giving the ball back to you.
I like that. I'm giving the ball back to you. That's good.
I don't know. You know, you probably get this question all the time. How do you not take on the problems of your clients? Right.
Yeah.
And so, because they're not our problems, because, you know, I used to go out and do parenting workshops. I don't have any kids. I was in an auto accident when I was 28 and I had surgeries in my 30s. And one of the things that just happened to me in life, but I go out and do parenting workshops, companies, and I go, look, I got good news and bad news. I feel, here's the bad news. I don't have kids. And I could see just almost the fury on their face. Like, how dare you? I go, let me tell you the good news. I don't have kids. So I have a perspective that you don't have that you need to hear. I have the training, I have the background, I have the, but if I'm in your world and I'm sympathizing to the extent where, how can I possibly be helpful to you? I can understand your perspective. I don't have to have lived it in the same exact way in order to be able to help you. So bearing witness to pain is a boundary. It says, I love you enough, whether you're at the grocery store or with someone you are in a relationship with, to listen and bear witness, but not to take the ball with me home.
Bearing witness to pain. I like that. Bearing witness to pain, but not being in pain with them.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean you don't feel it. I think, you know, absorbing things that aren't our responsibility is too much to ask for any one of us. And one that where those of us raised, we have to work our way out of that, right? Some people are better at that. More often, the problem is I don't know how to empathize enough, frankly. I hear that more often than I empathize too much. Mm. And here's the other thing for those who struggle with empathy is that I believe listening leads to empathy and not the other way around. Part of what we're telling people to do is to be empathetic when they show up. Now I'm talking somebody who has the ability to be empathetic, right?
Sure.
But they go, that's like beyond, it frightens them because they're like, I don't have the same level of empathy that Lindsay has. How can I do that? Well, you don't have to. When you are listening in and on the path and in the movie, not just watching the movie, your empathy builds. This is how we build our emotional quotient, so that we have to train our brains to be empathetic at different levels. If you're not socialized this way, if you don't have language around emotions, if you don't ask about emotions, how would you possibly develop your empathy? So listening helps lead to that.
It's so funny. I was thinking about my brother. So we are very, very two opposite. I mean, couldn't be any more opposite on the spectrum. And he struggles with empathy. And I can tell that he's probably going through some corporate training or some executive training on that.
Yeah.
Because, he and I are very close, and he's the only sibling I have. But I've told him some things where I'm frustrated or things that are going on. And I don't know, I can't verbatim say what he said, but he'll say something like, I hear what you're saying. That must be really tough. I don't relate to it because I've never experienced it. But what I'm fearing is that I'm not going to come off as empathetic, but I want you to know that I feel you. So it's like he's saying that he's empathetic, but without being empathetic. So I was like, oh my God, that was brilliant.
Well, how did it feel for you?
It did, because that's actually one of my biggest complaints relationally with him over the years is just, I always felt like he didn't get me. Or I always felt like the over emotional child. And he was the one who, and I think he's been accused probably by his family of, why don't you feel, he doesn't seem empathetic. But he actually, I think deep down, does feel empathetic. He doesn't know how to articulate how he feels. So typically, if he doesn't know how to respond, like, for instance, I've been divorced, he never has been, so he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get divorced. He doesn't understand my struggles. But he was telling me that he understands it, and he has empathy for me, but he'll always say, I'm not sure exactly what to say either. So I don't want you to think that because I don't know what to say, I'm being empathetic. And I think that happens a lot is I actually don't relate to what you're saying to me. And so I think a lot of people who come off as unempathetic just don't get it.
They don't have language. So somebody, I could be wrong, but it sounds like he had some coaching around. Let me help you.
Oh yeah. He's Mr. like executive coaching 101. He goes on things all the time. Yeah.
So good for him, because that's language around his state of being in line and yours. That's, he's trying to bridge the gap for you. And that is a step in the right direction. And we can form new neural pathways, by the way, if we're given the right tools. So that's the beginning, right? But again, we just expect people to be empathetic, even though we don't teach them language around how to do it or to understand it. And so, you know, I mentioned I was in an auto accident. I had a cervical spine injury I looked fine, but I was in level, like I lived a version of my mother's life, just physical, wow, not emotional. Level 9 pain, like all day long, retching, hard, like for years. And people didn't understand what they couldn't see. And they would say, the people that would say, I can't imagine. I go, I hope you never have to. I don't wish that for you, but I appreciate that you even recognize you can't fathom it. That's a step in the right. We don't have to feel what somebody feels in order to empathize. We have to appreciate what they could be feeling. And I think there's just so much expectation, and the word empathy is being thrown around so much, that we need to start giving people the language around how to understand at a different level. So I think that's really fantastic.
I think you make a really good point. Yeah. Well, Christine, thank you so much for coming on the show. Tell us a little bit about, where my listeners can find you and any workshops that you have and all the good stuff that makes you you.
Well, thank you. So the company that I run and own is called Equipped. That's EQUIPT-people.com is where they can find us. We equip people with the human skills. We help elevate the human skills. Listening is the foundation of the house, because if you don't listen well, it's hard to do other things well. The book is called What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? That's available in all formats, so on the major platforms. And yeah, we mostly serve organizations. We teach them how to listen to understand, to drive results. But the beautiful thing is there's personal benefit to that as well as business benefit. We are truly in the transformational business of listening, as well as how people show up and are there in their relationships.
Well, that's great. You're in a really interesting niche, and I wish you luck with all of that.
Thank you.
And Christine, thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't already, make sure you sign up for your free subscription to Blessings of a Breakup, where you will receive daily spiritual guidance on getting out of your pain and back to who you really are. Go to my website at lindsayellison.com.